him a mighty warrior. God always believes more for us than we believe for ourselves. And then he says, I'm going to send you on this tremendous adventure, this journey. You're going to have to trust me. And you need to go in the strength that you have. We are stronger than we give ourselves credit for. And the lie of the enemy is to get us to disbelieve who God says we are and how strong we actually are. May we overcome inadequacy, but it's only overcome one way. Faith. Believing who God really is and what he has in store for us. We'll never do anything of substance, anything that matters outside of faith. Hebrews 11:6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. So what do you believe? Jordan, who's our drummer and he handles all of our media department, I sent him a link to a USA Today article that I read yesterday or day before maybe, that was on a drone competition for video. And it's an international contest where people fly drones and film a story. I think the max length was like 12 minutes. And I text him and said, man, check this article out because I really believe that you could win this. And he texted me back and said, man, that's like way outside of my league. I don't think I can do that. And I was like, no, man, if you really believe that you can, like, I just really like know that you're good enough to be able to do that. And this wasn't me like flattering him. He really is. And he just sent back this list of, well, this is what we're up against. We need all this gear. The drones start at $3,500 for the uber cheap ones. The cameras I have, and it was like a list of like $25,000, $35,000 worth of stuff just to begin to get into the game. And he's like, it just won't happen. And something inside of me went, that's really just not the case. It could. My text back was like, man, if this is something that God's put on your heart, and I'm not saying that it is, but if it is, why don't you believe him and trust him with the details? You just have to decide if this is something that he's calling you to. I don't know. I just thought it was a cool article. I think many times people fail to live in the place of victory because let me tell you, Jordan could win that competition if that's what he was called to do. I don't know if it is. He actually didn't respond other than like thumbs up. But I know this, like, God did not create your marriage or your business or your life to be a failure, that we have to believe by faith. God is perfect in all of his ways, and he's a good, good father. Isn't that an awesome song? So when we trust him and we say, Lord, I'm not going to do it my way, I'm going to do it your way, he leads us to a fantastic place. We just have to be willing to relinquish control, and that's what we're talking about today, killing control. I think everybody has dreams and visions that they want to see in their life, and you have to come to the revelation, okay, God's vision for me is bigger than mine, and trust him, and listen, and he'll whisper to you about what he has for you. Sometimes it's right in line with what you were thinking. Sometimes it's not. Either way, it's right in line with the way that God wired you, if that makes sense. But you'll have to decide whether or not you believe him. And I just, as Brittany was singing, I jotted this out. Don't define yourself by the externals. We so often define our reality by what we look around us and see. And we go, man, this just bites bad. And we look at all the negative things, and that's not what we should be doing. We should never define ourselves by the externals. That's going to get you to the place of arrogance or inadequacy, one or the other, depending on your personality type. Define yourself and the present and the future by what can be. What is it that you believe? Like, vision's huge. What do you see? I don't know what I see. You'll see what you set your heart on. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart is also. He also said that if you're wondering what my heart is like, what's coming out of your mouth? Because he said, from an overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. This morning, I want to talk to you about heart issues and the faith level that we've got to have to believe God when he speaks about who we are and what he's calling us to, and not to try and take back control from him. Let me just tell you, what is God calling us to as a church? To love him, to love others, to serve. You know, I was watching the tiles as Rustin was prepping us for offering, and I'm watching Charity's worship album. I'm like, wow, That was actually really phenomenal. It's really a good album. If you haven't downloaded it, it's $5. You should. It's great. And I remembered when we started here years ago, when it was like our musicians, their skill level wasn't really the greatest. Their hearts, even worse. They couldn't sing and they had bad attitudes about it. They couldn't play and they were upset with it. It was really, really rough. Not all of them were terrible. I mean, I was playing at that time too, so I better. Okay. And yet God spoke to me about the future and what he has for us. And it's great, and you have to know it. My marriage, when it was so bad, I believed God, even though everything around me said, it's like at its bitter end, and you're pretty bitter, and so is she, and she's messed up, and so are you. It might be better to part ways. And yet I really believed God, and there was something in my heart. What do we believe? Let me tell you, we look around and you know, we'll run 600 on a weekend. We're church probably somewhere 1,000, 1,200 people. And a lot of people go, well, that's great. Let me just tell you, it's the very beginning of what God has for us. Not because it's about growing a large church, but it's seeing people walk in the truth of who God is and the freedom of who he created them to be in him. Are y'all following me? And that I know that the best is yet to come. And what we see even on this platform of our musicians, it's just the beginning of what God has in store. Because when we surrender control of what we have, the dreams of our heart become a reality. But the issue is surrendering control. And the fact is that a lot of us have real issues with that. Like, I'm like the poster boy for that. People always told me I was wound pretty tight. You know what? I just saw my notes. I got to plug something. Small groups, they start this week. Random. Some might call me ADD. Men's Bible study, for me, I can plug mine because they're mine. 6 o'clock on Wednesday mornings at Starbucks. This book is back here on the back in the foyer. Just saying, thank you. I reminded our small group directors looking at me now with wonderful eyes. Whew. Moving on. So many of us, in areas of our lives, we try to take control. It's just human nature. Even people that are pretty laid back, in some area, they're probably a little controlling. My wife is the most laid back person ever. Don't mess with her kitchen. Like, really. Like, don't mess with the kitchen or the laundry. Like, I'm not that I'm complaining about either one of those. I'm just saying, but like, there are rules, and like, you can't just like throw your clothes on the ground. I mean, No, they're going to hamper, okay? And like, she's going to get really upset because and she is the most laid back, easygoing, wonderful person in the world. But there's areas where she's like, we got to get this done. Now listen, you can do that with a right heart and a right spirit or a wrong heart and a wrong spirit. Sadly, lots of people do lots of things in a control manner that's with a wrong heart and a wrong spirit. Why do we try to control things? It's a good question. How do you know if you're controlling? Okay, before we answer that question, how many of you would say, like, perhaps, maybe, I'm a little on the controlling side? Raise your hand. Wow, that's all the control freaks are at the second service. I haven't even figured that one out. Wow, a lot of you guys. So I'm just going to go through the questions that came up on the screen right before I walked up. Do you believe you know what's best? Maybe. Maybe everybody else is an idiot. I don't know. They could be. Sometimes they act like it. Have you driven lately? Do you freak out when things don't go your way? Sometimes I might have that tendency, maybe. Do you have a tendency to correct others? Even when they don't ask for it. Yeah, but they didn't know what they were doing. Look at them. They were dumb. I helped them. Got it. Do you have to be in control? I had to learn how to let my wife drive, like with me in the vehicle. I'm serious. Y'all think this is like a small thing. This is a big thing. We took a 3,500-mile vacation family trip for Christmas. That was our Christmas to their kids, going to see their cousins in Arizona and then going to the Grand Canyon and Carlsbad and Albuquerque. It was a long drive, and I realized that I could probably drive the whole thing, but I was like, maybe I shouldn't. And so I had to learn how to let my wife drive and me be okay with it. And here's how I knew I'd overcome that. I was able to sleep while she was driving. A couple times I woke up thinking we were all going to die, but it was all right. Why? Why do we try to control things, whether it's work or finances or relationships or people or coworkers or kids? Why? Because we've made it about us. Whether it's from arrogance or whether it's from fear. The reality is that it is all about us. It's our ego. The best definition I've heard of ego is this: edging God out. And I look back on my life and realize that there were a lot of times where I edged God out. And I walked, instead of freedom and the freedom of trusting Him, I walked in the weight and misery of trying to do it myself. And it was a heart issue. And God's been working on my heart. And I feel like this message is kind of for me. My life verse, if you're here and you've been here for any length of time, you probably hear me say, well, this is like my life verse. And there's like 10 verses that I have that are my life verse. There's a bunch of verses that are my life verse. But if I had to pick one, this is it. And it correlates directly with today's message on killing control. And I didn't really memorize it in the version that's up there, so just bear with me, read it, and you can listen to me. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your path. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. The issue was is that for a lot of years, I was trusting God with 90% of my heart, or 95, or 98, or 99% of my heart. But I wasn't trusting Him with all of my heart. But I am called to trust the Lord with all my heart. And do not lean on your own understanding. Look, I'm a question guy, and I ask why, and I want to know the answer. I want to understand. To take something at face value without understanding has always freaked me out. But there are just some things in this journey called life that you just won't have the answer to. You have to trust God. Because if you try and scrape your way in your own understanding, it's miserable. Trust the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all of your ways, acknowledge Him. In other words, Lord, everything I do, You are good. I trust You. And it says, He will make your path straight. Why do so many people's lives seem to get crooked and go like this, or have the ups and the downs? It's because they're not trusting God. They're trying to figure it out themselves, and they end up trying to control things that they really have no business controlling. And in reality, you can't control. Control is an illusion. I've had to come to that stark reality. There are times and places where you can control certain things, but you cannot control everything, and you can't even control those certain things indefinitely, because circumstances will ultimately arise that you did not anticipate, that you have no control over. It's outside of your power. So we're this morning going to look at a bad example of control, and it starts in Genesis chapter 16. It's with Abram and Sarai. Now here's the deal. God has called Abram to follow Him. It's in Genesis chapter 12. We're not turning there, but this is the background. God called Abram to follow Him. And He said, hey, Abram, follow me. I'm going to take you to a land, and it's a really good land. And there, I'm going to make you a father. And not just any father, a father of many nations. And your descendants, they're going to be like the stars in the sky, like the sand on the beach. They're going to be without number. That's what I'm going to do for you if you follow me. And so Abram followed God. And he went to this place called Canaan. That's where God had for him to go. And I'm sure that he never, ever forgot the promise that God made to him. I'm pretty sure about that because Abram was an old man when he left, in his 70s. And God promised him he'd be a father of many nations. But he's been in the place that God has for him for a while. And nothing's happened. And so he makes a decision. And here it is, Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 4. It says, now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him. But wait, hadn't God promised him that he'd have kids? Like he'd be the father of many nations? You can't be the father of many nations if you don't have any kids, do you? Can that happen? No. But she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, "The Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her." And Abram agreed with Sarai's proposal. Like, hold on, this is kind of strange. This story is whacked. It's messed up. Because they've been promised a kid, right? They've been promised he's going to be a father of many nations. You can't be a father of many nations without being a father, can you? And so, it's been a while. And his wife comes to him and says, "Listen, like, we're not having kids and we're getting old. Why don't you take my servant, Hagar, and like, we can have kids through her." And Abram says, "Oh, all right." And I know what some of you sickos might be thinking, like, that's a good idea, baby. Except I want to point out something. This woman's name was Hagar. Just say it. Hagar. That is not a good-looking woman. I'm sorry, I love you. If your name is Hagar here, I'm so sorry. I doubt that is the case, but like, that is not a good, like, you don't think good things when you're like, "Hagar, this is my lovely maidservant, Hagar." And he took Hagar and like, "You're going to do what? Wait, what did God promise him? A son. He promised him a son." Let's read on. It says, verse 3, "So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as a wife." And look at the parentheses here. This happened 10 years after Abram had settled in the land of Canaan. He followed God. He obeyed God. He believed the promise. And he had been there for 10 years and nothing had happened. Nothing had happened. Zippo, zilch, nada. He's getting old. Now he's in his 80s. And his wife comes to him and says, "Hey, we've been here for 10 years. God promised that we'd have a kid. Look at you, you old and wrinkly. Look at me, so am I. Like, we're going to have kids. And like, it's not happening with me. So I don't know what's going on, but like, maybe God has something else. So like, maybe you should take Hagar here." And there's Hagar. He's like, "Okay." And he takes it into his own hands. And he messes it all up. Ishmael was born. Between the son that God ultimately gave Abram and Sarai together, Isaac, and the son that Abraham fathered with Hagar, Ishmael, you do know the descendants. Do a little research and a little study. They're still warring today. There's consequences when we take control. But even outside of those consequences and greater than those consequences, God's promise still holds true. Why do we feel like we have to control everything? What do we try to control? Finances. It's amazing to me that people really freak out about money. I can't explain like why I've never freaked out about money, never once worried about it. I guess it's because my mom and dad both had like tremendous faith that like God provides over and over and over, told me that. And my dad was ridiculously generous. You know, his advice to me when I was 14 was like, "Son, like, you need to learn. You need to get to the place where you can live on a third. You can invest a third, and you can give away a third." And that's pretty generous. And he told me over and over, like, "It's not even ours. It's not even our stuff. It's not our money. This is God's. This is God's. It's just a blessing from him." And so I've never, ever once worried about money, but lots of people do. It was instilled in me from the time I was a little bitty that God is my source. And so I really just believed that. It was tested, and truth can be found only through testing. And so I put it to the test because I felt like when Lisa and I were first getting married, I didn't share this at first service, but I really feel like I'm supposed to now. I'd made a fair amount of money flipping classic cars in college, and we'd bought our first little place. It wasn't much. It was a 1972 trailer in Scott, Louisiana, off of Willow. It was really pretty rough. area. And our church was in a building program, and we were actually moving, and I was on staff, and I was going to get to live at this little rundown house that they had on the property. And so we sold our trailer, and I sold it for a decent amount of money, considering it was busted up and nasty, but it was our home, and we had loved it and fixed it up. And I felt like the Lord said, give that money. It wasn't like a mandate. It was like, I could. And so we gave, because we really believe that God had something great in store, not just for us, but for the church and for people to come to Christ. And we didn't see it immediately. We gave it. And it's been the single greatest thing that I've done, because in that act of surrender, Lord, it's all yours. And at that time, it was pretty much all the cash that we had. It did some great things in us. But today, there'll be right at 5,000 people in service in the Broussard campus, the Lafayette campus, and the Opelousas campus. The Opelousas campus is 4.5 years old. They'll have over 2,000, 2,500 this morning in a city that's 18,000 people and half black and half white, and that's what their congregation reflects. I got to be a part of that in a step of faith. I've never been controlling with finances. Other areas, not so much. What do you try to control? Money, then you'll operate in fear. You'll operate not in faith, but you'll operate in fear. You aren't able to give. You aren't able to tithe. And you wonder why God doesn't bless, because you're not a cheerful giver. God doesn't want you to write a check or to give somebody money begrudgingly. He wants you to do it because you trust him and you believe him. My marriage, I tried to control my wife and control what she thought and what she said and where we went, and it was miserable. And I was trying to make it better, sincerely, but I was operating out of fear and arrogance. Out of inadequacy and arrogance, all at the same time. What are you trying to control? When you try and control things like Abram and Sarai, you end up with a mess. Think about it. He slept with the servant. And let me just tell you, out of that story, there's two things that you need to remember. You should write this down. It's very important. Two things out of that story. Number one, never sleep with somebody named Hagar. Got it? Number two, never forget rule one. And here's the fact, is that when we look back on our own stupid actions, a lot of times we forget how dumb it looks. Is that a dumb story? God promised, but I'm going to sleep with the maid. That's messed up. So how do we kill control? I want to give you three things, really three questions that I'm asking you to help you kill control. Question number one, is it worth my concern? It's amazing the number of things that I freaked out over through the years. Probably no more amazing than those of you who raised your hand and said, I'm a self-professed control freak, that you freaked out over things that really weren't even your concern. Why are you so concerned? Why are you concerned with the vehicle not being cleaned? Why are you concerned with such and such? Why are you concerned with what they're doing? Just stop. Look, I don't like bumper stickers, okay? I just can't stand bumpers. I don't know why. I hate bumper stickers. And if you're here and you're a mama who proudly displays you and your husband and your three kids and your dog and your cat, and they're all waving and smiling on the back, that's good for you, but I just want to go, ah. I don't know why. I thought about this morning, though, why I don't like bumper stickers. Maybe it's because when I was growing up, my dad told this story, and he told it a lot to a lot of people, but it's a funny story, and it's a true story. He had a friend who had taken a priest, and this is in Jennings. He had taken this priest hunting, and they were coming back into Jennings from Lake Arthur, and he was driving, this dad's friend was driving, and the priest was sitting next to him in the truck, and the car in front of them, as they pulled up to the stoplight right there on Shankland Avenue where Popeye's is, and the old Mr. Cook was there. I grew up in Jennings, that's why I know this. And he pulled up, and he saw that the vehicle in front of him had a bumper sticker that said, honk if you love Jesus. And so dad's buddy looked to the priest and said, he's feeling like he should do something spiritual, some kind of way. And he's like, oh, do you think we ought to give him a little honk? And the priest said, yeah, you might as well. And so, ram, ram, he honks. The dude gets out of his car and cusses them both out. Maybe I don't like bumper stickers because they, to me, come across as like fake. And I don't even know where I was going with that story, but dang, it's funny. What are we concerned about? Why do I let that concern me? Why does that bother me? What is it that you try and control? And I know what it is. If like, Actually, I went somewhere and they stuck a bumper sticker on my vehicle, like for going to like that establishment. Has that ever happened to you? But it made me really mad. I want to rip it off and fuss at those people. Like, why am I so upset about that? Why do I have to control everything? What is it about me? If y'all ask those questions, is it really worth your concern? Man, the littlest things can get people all worked up. You know people like that? Are they fun to be around? Like, there's an unnamed staff member that I hesitate to go eat with, and we've had to speak lovingly to this person, because every time we take them to eat, like, something's not right. I'm like, who made you like the chef? Like, what are you, like, Chef Boyardee? I'm sorry, did you notice that this is not right? Like, and they're sending food back, and they're asking, and I know Pastor Josh is over there just, like, killing it, because I know who it is, and we all know who it is, and I'm like, oh my gosh, no, you're not allowed to talk. He identified himself. Now, that's just foolish. How about this? The truth, now you can identify yourself. Did you ever tell a manager, restaurant 101? Thank you. Woo! And now the altar just for this man right here. Let's have the... Is it really worth us getting riled up about? The story of Mary and Martha. Jesus is at their house, and Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet, and Martha's freaking out trying to get everything done. She's worried about everything, but she's missing out on sitting at the feet of Jesus. She says this to Jesus. She told Jesus, like, hey, you need to tell Mary, get up and help me. Like, we got to get this place clean. And Jesus says to her, my dear Martha, you're worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Hold on to the promise that God has given you, and you'll have to learn how to wait. But more importantly, hold on to the person of God. He's more than some ethereal being. He knows you. He'll speak to you if you seek him and you listen, and you can get to know him. And when you do, you realize there's a lot of stuff you don't need to be worked up about. Life's going to go on. Let go and let God. That's where it was with the bumper sticker. I want to hate that bumper sticker just because it's a bumper sticker and people put it on the back of their vehicles and on their glass on their truck. And I'm like, let go, let God. And I want to go, ah. But the fact is, it's true. Stop getting riled up. If you get riled up easily, it's indicative of a heart that wants to control. The second thing. Is it mine to control? Ask yourself this question. Is it mine to control? Sometimes yes and sometimes no, but we have to know the difference between surrendering control and relinquishing responsibility. I need to surrender control in my marriage, but I'm still responsible for the state of it and my wife because I'm the husband. I don't need to control that because it doesn't work out, does it, men? Have you ever tried to control your wife? How'd that work out for you? I guess I'm only talking to the single men now. I know, I was almost there with you, man. You have to surrender control. It doesn't mean you have to relinquish responsibility. Finances, great example. I am responsible for being wise and not overspending and not spending on stupid things and not failing to spend on the things that I should, but I have to give control to God. Because it's all his anyway. The Bible says every good and perfect gift comes from the Father above. That means a paycheck. You may not like the job that you get the paycheck from, but ain't nobody complaining about the dollars in there. You may say that there's not enough of them, but you're not complaining about the ones you have, are you? Some people do. Their heart's messed up. Is it really mine to control? Relationships. You can't control the future. And those of you who are not married, you can't control whether or not you're going to get married, can you? Doesn't work so well when a young man walks up to a young lady and says, God just told me I'm going to marry you. It's a good way to freak somebody out pretty bad. Pretty sure I know what you're dressed like, too. You're in sweatpants and a wrinkled t-shirt. You can't control if somebody's going to marry you or not, but you can take responsibility for who you are. And you can dress nice. You can take a shower. You can put on deodorant. You can wear clean clothes that aren't wrinkled. You can get a job. Like, you can save up for a vehicle. Here's a big one. It's important. You can sell the Xbox. 30-year-old men, spending 6 hours a day on the Xbox. Come on, seriously? Love y'all. Then you wonder why you're not married. I'm sorry that I actually say that. It's true. Whew. Take responsibility. You don't get to control whether or not you get married, but you can take responsibility. Does this make sense? It's not yours to control. The future is not yours to control. You can plan for it. 5-year plan, 10-year plan, 20-year plan. Those are good. It's not bad. That's a good thing. But let me just tell you, life has a way of just throwing you curveballs and trashing all of that, and you have to be okay with it. And it's gone like this. I read this past week. There was a sweet Japanese lady celebrated her 117th birthday. And they asked her about her life. And I quote, she said her life, here it is, it seemed rather short. Here today, gone tomorrow. James says that. He says, your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, then it's gone. Is it really worth it? Let it go. It's not even yours to control. Can you change your spouse? No, you cannot. But let me tell you what you can do. You can pray for them. You can love them. You can believe that the best is yet to come. My marriage was a wreck. I was an idiot. But this, I got, had a God moment revelation. I needed to learn how to love my wife selflessly. I needed to pray for her and with her. And I always believed that our marriage would be great, and today it is. But it had to come through a lot of pain of me letting go of control of the relationship, loving her, praying, and believing. Can you heal your loved one that's sick? Can you? We've all known people that are sick. We've probably all known people that have died because they're sick. Can you heal them? No, but what can you do? You can pray and believe because we know a God who can heal and who is huge and big, and he calls himself the great physician. We can pray, we can believe, we can love. Can you control your future or the future of others? No, you can't, but what can you do? You can pray, you can seek God, you can believe, then you can love him, love yourself, love others, and love life. If you're here, and there's a lot of you that said that you have a tendency towards control, you need to ask yourself the questions. Is it really worth my concern? Is it mine to control? And then the last thing, as we wrap up, is there something that you need to surrender? Is there something that you need to surrender? Abram and Sarai were hopeful with the promise that God had given them, that he would be the father of many nations. Really, they just wanted one son. That'd be enough. They just wanted one. They didn't have patience. They didn't wait. Let me just tell you a great definition of patience, by the way. You should really write this down. Patience is waiting without worry. They worried. And so they acted out of fear. And they acted outside of God's plan. Did they have consequences from that? Well, of course they did, but God's promise still held true, which is such good news for me today, because it doesn't matter the stupid things that I've done yesterday or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. God's promise still holds true. We have to trust him. And then we have to be willing to lay down the one thing that he's promised us, and it's the one thing that we want more than anything. Are you willing to do that? Because ultimately, Abram had a real encounter with God, and God reaffirmed that promise in a covenant, and it changed his name to meaning father of many, Abraham. And his wife's name was Sarai, to Sarah, meant father and mother. And ultimately, they had a son named Isaac, and I can't imagine what that was like. That was their joy. That was their everything. And then God showed up and told Abraham to bring him to Mount Moriah, build an altar, and sacrifice him there. God told him to kill his son, to lay his son down on the altar and kill him on Mount Moriah. Abraham did it. And he built an altar. The whole time Isaac's old enough to know what's going on, he's like, Dad, like, where's the sacrifice? I don't see it. And Abraham's faith never wavered this time. And he said, God will provide. Don't worry about it. God will provide. And he laid his son down on the altar. And even though it didn't make any sense, he raised the knife up. And as he was about to plunge it into his son's chest to kill him, an angel showed up and said, don't do it. No, your heart's good. And at that moment, there was a rustling in the bush just a ways away. And it was a ram. In Genesis 22:13, it says, Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abram went after him, went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, it's the mount of the Lord, it will be provided. When we let go, even when it seems crazy, and we trust God, the miraculous happens. Interestingly enough, Mount Moriah, do you know what theologians say Mount Moriah really is? It's Golgotha. It's the place of the skull. It's where Jesus was sacrificed for you and for me. What a picture it paints of us being able to trust God. Say, Lord, I'm letting go of what I've been holding on to. Let's bow our heads. If you're here and there's an area that you need to relinquish control, today God is speaking to you and he's saying, trust me. Trust me. Don't try and figure it out yourself. I'll direct your path. Trust me. If you're here and you know there's an area of your heart that you've been holding on to, and here's how you'll know, you worry about it. It freaks you out. You operate in fear. Like, you think about it and your chest gets tight. If there's something there, today God is saying, trust me, give that to me. Stop giving me 90%, 99%. Give that to me. Don't worry. Trust me. If you're here and there's an area where you know, today God's putting his finger on your heart and he's saying, let that go. If that's you, nobody looking, just raise your hand and say, that's me, Pastor. That's me. That's lots of people. You just stand up right where you are. Nobody's looking at you. Father, I just pray that today, that as people, y'all stand up. If you raise your hands, stand up. That, Father, that those who raise their hands and now are standing to their feet, that God, that you move. That, Lord, as they're standing up in faith, believing that you are at work, that God, that your kingdom come, that your will is done in their life, as they say, Lord, I give it to you, whether it's finances, that you're freaking out over that. Let me just tell you, trust God. Trust God. Be faithful. Be a giver. Tithe. Give offerings. Bless people. Be generous, because it's not yours anyway. If it's your marriage, that you're trusting God, that you surrender that to him. You stop trying to control your mate. You stop trying to control others. If it's your future and you operate in fear and your plan is laid out, but it's getting messed up and that's freaking you out, give God all of you. Give him your future. So, Father, I just pray a blessing over them. They walk in freedom in Jesus' name. Let's all stand together. It's an awesome day. May we walk out of here in freedom. Control freaks live in bondage. I know, because everything tweaked me out. And when I got to the place where I could release things, it's like I was releasing the chains that kept me bound. And let me just tell you, some of you today, you're struggling with the chains that keep you bound in your life, and you don't even know what they are. Maybe it's time for you to surrender all of you. You're like, I don't even know what it is, but God's doing something to me. Maybe you need to realize he loves you. He has a plan for you. He gave the most precious gift ever, his son, so that you could walk in freedom and life and purpose that he has already planned for you. It's awesome. Listen, if you're here and you've never surrendered your life to Christ, today is the day. Don't walk out of here without doing that. Prayer partners, why don't you guys come right now? There's three ways you connect with our church, really simply. One, come pray with somebody if there's something that's going on. Number two, fill out a card. It's more than just your name and number. It allows us to connect with you in a real way. Put it in the boxes by the doors on the way out. Number three, our website. It's a great tool. This is what I want all of you to know. God is so worth trusting. I said something and I want to repeat it earlier. Truth has to be tested for it to be known to be true. Some of you need to put God to the test. That's called faith. Do it. Let's bow our heads. Father, thank you for this time this morning. Lord, I just pray that as we walk out of here, we walk out of here in faith, trusting you for the future, not trying to figure it out ourselves, letting go of the things that freak us out and believing that you have a place of promise for us. And so, God, I pray a blessing on everyone here this morning. In Jesus' name, everybody said, amen. Love you guys. Have a great week. You're dismissed. If you need prayer, you come.